What a joy, what a pleasure it is to be in the presence of the Lord and to worship Him in spirit and in truth and to know that He receives the sacrifices of worship and praise gladly. It's a joy to minister to the Lord, and that's what we're doing in this time of communion. We're ministering to the Lord. We're bringing sacrifices and laying them on the altar of worship. We're glorifying God by our sacrifices, ministering to Him, exalting the Lord. What a joy it is to know that He hears and appreciates our worship. And what a joy it is to know that we can commune with the Lord anytime, any place, whether we're driving, commuting, whether in the quiet of our own home, in the middle of the night. We can commune with the Lord. He's promised that if we come to Him, He'll in no wise cast us out. But He's ready to receive us. He's waiting. He's there for us. In fact, He's promised that He'll never leave us nor forsake us. He's promised that He's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. The Lord has promised that even though we may walk through the valley of the shadow of death, He's with us. He'll never leave us nor forsake us. What a blessing to know that we have the presence of Christ in our lives every moment, every day, every hour. What a blessing it is. And what a blessing it is to know that we have a purpose in life, that the Lord has called us and ordained us with a high and holy calling. And He's promised that our Father is glorified when we bring forth fruit, much fruit. And our prayer is that our fruit should remain, that our fruit be good fruit, that we would bring many into the kingdom of God. That's one manner of fruit, and another manner of fruit is the fruit of righteousness that we bear in our own lives, the things that we were talking about earlier, the integrity and the fidelity, the Christian morality, the noble principles that we see in Jesus Christ. That's another manner of fruit that we will see manifested in our lives as we have intimate communion with the Lord. We're changed. Day by day, we're changed. The Lord is the one that makes all things new. And what a blessing it is. But as we were talking earlier about the power of righteousness, there is a power in righteousness, and that power is given to us. You see, God has given us a strength and a power and a force of the Holy Spirit to be the light of the world, the salt of the earth, to be a seasoning, if you will, in our generation, to change the flavor of our generation. And that flavor is changed by the power of righteousness, the power of the Holy Spirit, that anointing, that unction, that endowment of power, that inspiration of the Holy Spirit that the Lord gives to us and causes to be manifested in our lives. The power of God through us changes our community, changes our nation, changes the world around us. And God has given us power over all the forces of evil, over all the power of the devil. He's promised, "Behold, I give unto you power, over all the power of the devil, power to trample on serpents and scorpions." You see what great power the Lord has given us. And it's through the power of God that we see our society changed and saved, our culture brought back to God. We see revival and spiritual awakening through that power given to us. He's told us that we're more than conquerors through Him that loved us, and we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. Great is our power. Great is our power in God. We have the power to change our nation. Our communities can be saved by the power that God's put in us. Well, how then do we use this power? First of all, by intimate communion with the Lord, by staying true to God in righteousness.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views. The views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line right now a Dr. Jay Lehrer, and we're going to be talking about one of the greatest scams that has ever been put over on the American people. It's called global warming. And of course, in response to global warming, why we're going to have to change our way of lives. We're going to have to cut back on our use of energy. We're certainly going to have to cut back on our use of cars. We're going to have to begin to do everything we can to alter Western civilization because of this terrible threat of global warming. We know that the world is warming because, well, the government has told us so, and they have some scientists who say the globe is warming. Of course, a few years ago, we were told that the globe was cooling. In fact, we were facing another minor ice age, but now, of course, the official party line has changed. And, of course, I think that perhaps this whole subject is important today. Because in reality, everything we believe is perception. As we often say, reality is usually scoffed at, perception is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. That'll determine what the future will bring. And most of what we see today, most of what we read in the media, most of what we hear on television and radio simply is illusion. Our reality is being created for us. With us on the line is Dr. Jay Lehrer. Dr. Lehrer, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, of course, Dr. Lehrer travels all over, of course, trying to get people to know the scientific truth about what's going on. And so I'm going to let him simply answer this question. What about global warming? Isn't this a scientific fact?
No, it's absolutely not a scientific fact. It is probably right now the largest scam being perpetrated on individual freedom. It is a program that lends itself to having governments around the world seize greater control over their citizenry by scaring them about bad things that may happen if the climate warms, and the science is totally fraudulent. The Earth's climate, of course, is constantly changing as there are changes in the sun, there are changes in the tilt of our axis and the shape of our orbit around the sun. There are changes in ocean currents, and the climate is always changing. We have records, believe it or not, Dr. Stan, that go back 250,000 years based on air bubbles in ice cores. We date the ice cores with carbon-14 dating quite accurately, and the bubbles in the ice cores contain a radioisotope called beryllium. And the quantity of the radioisotope in the air bubbles is indicative of the sun's radiation that was coming into the atmosphere when those air bubbles were seized within the ice. So we have very good records going back 250,000 years. We know the climate has been very much warmer than it is now. And even in the last 3,000 years, there have been five major warm periods. We're not in one of them. As your audience knows, we can barely predict the weather accurately a week out, and to alter our economy and take away individual freedoms and alter the way we create energy because of absurd predictions 100 years down the road is ridiculous. But what it does allow is governments to take more freedom away from peoples. And, of course, we're one of the freest countries in the world, and the rest of the world is all for global warming because they recognize if we were to go along with it, it would shackle our greatest economy on the planet. So everybody lines up against us, and any scam that will weaken us, most other countries are for, which is why there's so much reaction against the war in Iraq. This is the first time really in history that there's only been one superpower, and they want to bring us to our knees. And I think people know that if we go to war with Iraq and we are eminently successful as we will be, it will strengthen our power and the recognition of how good we are and how good our system of government is.
Well, of course, the problem that is that with the various Kyoto protocols, this whole treaty on global warming and climate change, really was, of course, only aimed at the United States. We were to cut back on our fossil fuel emissions, but there were no restrictions on China, which is the greatest polluter in the world, and certainly, very, very soon will far exceed our industrial output right here in the United States.
Within 15 years, Dr. Stan, China will be the largest producer of CO2, but additionally, India, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina are also not included in the Kyoto Protocol. So anything we did, or any of the developed countries did, would have a virtually insignificant effect on the climate. But you really need to go back to the root of it, and the root of it is that carbon dioxide is not, in fact, a contaminant. It is gaseous fertilizer, and because man has, in fact, increased the carbon dioxide content of our atmosphere by about 30% over the last 100 years, is the reason why our forests have proliferated around the globe. The growing of food everywhere on the planet has become easier. Yields on acreage everywhere is greater, and especially in dry climates. When there is more carbon dioxide in the air, plants do not need to open and close their stomata or pores by which they take in the carbon, which is essentially their lifeblood. And when they don't have to open and close as often to get the carbon they need, they do not transpire as much water out of the plant. And therefore, in drier climates, we're seeing dramatic increases in yields of all kinds of crops, which is a boon to all the people that live in arid areas on the planet.
Well, now, my understanding is that sometime in the ancient past, there really were higher levels of carbon dioxide on the planet than there are today, and that's perhaps at the time when the material that became coal was here. Is there any evidence that we did have much higher levels of carbon dioxide in the past?
More than twice as much carbon has been in the atmosphere than exists today. Right now it's about 350 parts per million of our atmosphere, up from 270 100 years ago. We have record of Earth's climate between 700 and 900 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and the relationship between high carbon and high temperature is not a direct one. We find periods in the 250,000 years of history that we have these records where a high temperature came before high carbon, and times when high carbon came before high temperature. So there's not even a direct relationship that they relate to each other. But although carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, it's relatively insignificant. 90% of the greenhouse gases are water vapor from our oceans and surface water bodies, and of course man has no impact on them at all. We've only have increased the carbon dioxide, but that's well below 10% of the total greenhouse gases. In fact, if we were to double the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere in the next 100 years from 350 parts per million to 700 parts per million, we know precisely what the impact would be on the climate. We know that additional gas would retain an additional 4 watts of heat per square meter of the Earth's surface. And everyone knows what a watt is because that's how we measure light bulbs. Well, the sun brings the Earth's atmosphere 342 watts per square meter every minute of every day. So a doubling of the CO2 in the atmosphere would essentially add approximately 1% additional heat to the atmosphere. And I don't know anywhere in any part of the United States that wouldn't be delighted to have things 1% warmer than they are.
Well, I think that the major thing is we refer to CO2 as a greenhouse gas, and you point out there about 350 parts per million of the atmosphere. That's the CO2. What percentage of greenhouse gas is actually CO2? What, 1 or 2% at the most?
It's about 4%.
4%, all right.
There's methane and a couple other chemicals in the atmosphere that make up approximately 10%. And water vapor is around 90%.
All right, fine. But what percentage of the entire atmosphere is carbon dioxide? Would it be, if we were to look at the entire atmosphere, what percentage of it would be carbon dioxide?
Well, it's 350 parts per million, so it's 0.0035.
0.0035, and they're yelling and screaming, you know, about that. You know, it's amazing how gullible people really are. I mean, they really believe this.
Well, I think human beings are wired to be afraid of things, and fear is a great controlling emotion, and that's how our populations are controlled by fear of the worst kind. In North Korea, they control people by fear of death. In a free country like we are, they control people by fear of some kind of disease or fear of the ocean rising or trumped-up fears that are relevant to a population that's untrained in science. It's very easy to throw out some scientific facts that people don't understand and make them afraid. We do it with chemicals in our water supply. We scare people that a certain chemical is in our water supply without telling the people that we're dealing with perhaps a part per trillion. And a part per trillion is 1 second in 32,000 years, and no one should be worried about any chemical in their air or water whose concentration is in the order of 1 second in 32,000 years. But people not understanding this kind of relationship can be scared by any concentration whatsoever, and that's how governments and groups that really want to undermine individual freedoms control populations.
And that's really what it's all about, is wanting to undermine individual freedom. Now, let's play devil's advocate. Well, but Dr. Lehr, what about the snows on Kilimanjaro? The snows on Kilimanjaro are melting, and they've been there for years, and now they're melting away, and what are we going to do about that?
Well, we're not going to do anything about it, because as the snows are indeed melting on Kilimanjaro, they're building up on other parts of the Earth. I mean, if you look at a snapshot of the Earth at any one time in history, there are always areas that are melting, and there's always ice that is increasing. There are bodies of ocean water that are becoming frozen, and other bodies that are becoming less frozen. So it's just a never-ending process of change, exactly as our weather changes. You know, we're having in the eastern part of the United States one of the most difficult winters that we've seen in decades, and sometimes we have heat spells. Actually, most heat records in the United States were set before the 1930s, but we have constant changes of weather, and these changes of weather also create changes in snow buildup and ice buildup and melting and freezing all over the globe. So it's very easy to take a little bit of data and try to scare people and make your point. But when you look at all of the data, you see very, very clearly that there are no dramatic changes going on right now in the Earth's climate.
And of course, the thing that they always talk about is the Arctic ice cap, not the Antarctic, but the Arctic ice cap. And of course, you know, very soon we're going to be able to take our ships across there, because there's not going to be any snow up in that area or any ice up in that area. But this is simply another variation of the same situation, that although there may be some melting there, there's actually increased freezing elsewhere.
Well, yes, and in fact, that's absolutely untrue. We're not going to be able to take boats across the Arctic ice cap, and they are definitely not melting, and that leads to a very interesting fact that your audience may be interested in. And one of the things that scares people that if we have global warming, perhaps the state of Florida would be underwater, and they picture sea levels rising. In fact, there's far more evidence that if the Earth were to warm 4 or 5 degrees over the next 100 years, that sea levels would go down because of the ice caps, because with an increase in the Earth's temperature of 4 or 5 degrees, we would still be well below freezing at both poles. But an increase in temperature would mean more precipitation. That precipitation comes from water vapor out of the oceans. And if that precipitation is relatively evenly distributed around the globe, it means we'll get more precipitation on the poles than we have now, and that precipitation will become frozen in ice. And so we'll have a net decline in the volume of water in the oceans, and a lowering of sea level is much more likely than an increase in sea level as a result of global warming.
You know, I've seen the textbooks that they have in our classrooms, and I remember this one, and it showed a picture of New York, and all you could see was the top of the Empire State Building and a few other buildings poking up above the sea level. And of course, this is the pictorial concepts that they're planting in the minds of our children as they terrify them about the dangers of global warming. And there's a concerted, organized effort all across America, indeed all across the world, but primarily here because it's aimed at the American people, to convince us of a lie. They're certainly very effective at it.
They are, and it's getting worse. They're actually a dozen states that have implemented legislation to reduce CO2 output on their states that are going to have disastrous impacts on the economy of those states. On the average, it's going to cost the states about $5 billion in tax revenue. It's going to cost every family thousands of dollars, and the loss of thousands and thousands of jobs at a time where all state budgets are really under pressure. You may have read recently the National Governors Conference met with the president, and they're trying to get the president to give more money to the states, and the president turned them down. And in spite of that, these ridiculous state legislators are looking at more and more legislation to buy into the Kyoto Treaty, even though the president dismissed it. So our ability to shoot ourselves in the foot because of our lack of scientific understanding is really amazing, and it's very dangerous to the whole American economy.
Well, now, would you like to comment on Dr. Arthur Robinson and his survey of the scientists of the scientific community of the United States and the response he got when he asked scientists to really to make a statement as to whether they felt there was any evidence at all that mankind had, and his effect had actually resulted in global warming?
Yes, he floated a petition all over the country among scientific groups and got 17,000 signatures on the petition, which essentially agrees that there is no evidence for any level of catastrophic warming of the globe that would require any alteration in our economic system, and that, of course, it's always worth studying and keeping an eye on it and being able to adapt to it, but there's no evidence. And studies of climatologists in the American Meteorological Society, all involved in climate, showed over 60% did not believe there was any evidence for any global warming caused by man. We're not sure if the Earth is warming or cooling. It's probably warming a little bit because we're coming out of a very cold period about 300 years ago. But there's certainly nothing happening that we would want to alter our economic system. But that's what the rest of the world wants us to do, and I really feel there is a parallel between what's going on in the world now with regard trying to stop us from doing the right thing to eliminate a dangerous dictator in Iraq and trying to cripple our economy by buying into a false premise that carbon dioxide that we put up into the air from our smokestacks is going to cause a global warming that's injurious to mankind.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Dr. Jay Lehrer, who's certainly an expert on this. He travels across the country trying to let people understand what's really going on. And, of course, really one of the interesting things about this whole concept after the Kyoto Protocol was the fact that, here this whole thing was designed around cutting down on global pollution, in other words, cutting down on carbon dioxide emissions. So what you could do, you could buy, these pollution rights from some other country or from some industrial concern that had actually cut down dramatically on their CO2 emissions, so you could increase your own emissions. You know, if you're really interested in of course, preventing the carbon dioxide emissions, why would you be able to sell and buy and sell pollution rights, which was one of the most ridiculous things I ever saw? But of course, what it would really result in was that American corporations could buy from the underdeveloped countries the right to pollute and then continue polluting.
That's right, and it does three things. One, it's a transfer of wealth, which is a nice socialistic idea where we would give money to groups that are polluting less. That's one aspect of it. Secondly, it's attractive to a lot of companies because it makes them look green, and they feel that being green makes their products more marketable. And thirdly, the organizations that run these trading systems are market organizations that make money. There's an organization just started up in Chicago called the Chicago Climate Exchange that hopes to make a lot of money facilitating trades in carbon dioxide. What is the worst of it, however, is that it gives credibility to the idea that there's something bad about carbon dioxide, which there is not. Now, the concept of trading pollution rights has been actually used effectively in a number of situations where it allows industries that have a difficult a technical time reducing their contaminants to pay other companies that have an easier time doing it, depending on what their product, and getting a balance, a saving of contamination. So the concept of trading rights does have its place, but not with CO2.
Well, of course, I think that the major thing our listeners must understand is this is really an attack on American industry, really on the viability of our nation. It's all about income redistribution, and whether it's the exporting of our jobs going throughout the world, certainly, and there's an organized program to encourage American companies to move offshore, and certainly there's no drawback to doing that as long as we have no tariffs, so they can produce things over in China at a fraction of what they cost here, bring them in here and make even a larger profit. And of course, if you are in competing with another concern that makes the same product and they can make it overseas cheaper than you can, then of course you're going to lose out. So we're actually encouraging our companies to move offshore, and that's all part of this income redistribution concept. From each according to their ability, to each according to their need. And of course, they need so much and we have so much. And the same thing really holds true with this whole idea of global warming. The real purpose behind it is not that they're really concerned about global warming, but how are you going to get really the other countries in the world to increase their industrial capacity at the expense of the United States? And that's really, in my estimation, what it's about. It's an attack on the economy and the infrastructure of the United States, and the fact that it's been backed by so many of our leaders and, of course, by our academic experts, when there is no scientific basis for it, simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think.
We need to have more of our citizens in the United States be proud of the fact that our founding fathers developed a constitution that enabled us to operate in a manner that was economically beneficial to all society, that raised people up from the poverty level, that gave us the greatest strength economically and in many other areas of human life, and we are today the strongest and best country as a result of our founding fathers and the Constitution, and people should not feel badly about this. They should not be embarrassed by the fact that we have the most successful system, and it should be obvious that other countries collectively want to bring us down to their level, and what we need to do is to strengthen our resolve and bring other countries up to our level, and I think clearly this current president wants that to happen.
Well, I think that that's one of the few things I really agree with George Bush on, and I'm very grateful that he did refuse to go along with the Kyoto Protocol, because, of course, if it had been left up to Bill Clinton, why, I think most of our major industries or smokestack industries would no longer be functioning here in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, how can we get this information out? Because, you know, you, of course, have the documentation. This is your field. You have the background. But the problem is, how do you get this circulated? Because, of course, so many of the radio programs, so much of television, you know, it's always showing us the ice melting there on the polar ice cap, or, you know, and of course, the repeated litany of frank lies. This is really what it is. And yet they have an agenda. And by, you know, because they control most of the media, and they certainly control most of the academia. I'm talking now about, the teaching of environmentalism in our schools and even in our universities. The public is not getting the truth.
Well, this is right, and the government is giving out $2 billion a year in climate change research, and so academia has bought into it because it pays them to do so. But let me make an offer to everyone in your audience of a free year subscription to a monthly magazine about environment and climate change that my organization, the Heartland Institute, produces. It's a 24-page full-cover color newspaper dealing with environment and climate. Every single month we publish articles on the kind of things that we are talking about, and all your listeners have to do is go to our website, which is www.heartland.org, and Heartland is just one word, heart and land, heartland.org. Go to that site, and on that site they can sign up for a free year's subscription to our newspaper, Environment and Climate News, and they'll have all the information that they could possibly want. And also on that website are literally hundreds and hundreds of articles and reports that deal with this subject that we're talking about, which are written at a very basic level that your listeners will easily be able to understand. And then they'll have the background that they need to enter into discussions, and everybody can make an impact. All of us, while I'm traveling around lecturing to large groups, everybody in this audience has a few dozen people who respect their views, and if they're willing to stand up in conversations and say, you know, I don't think there is global warming, and I've heard and I've read thus and so, even if they don't get all the facts straight in presenting them to somebody they're talking with, just the fact that they are planting a seed of doubt in the mind of someone who respects them does a great deal of good.
Well, now, have you gotten into the Club of Rome's program, their
yes,
concept of limits of growth?
I read the Club of Rome report. I think it originally came out around 1962, as I recall. And, of course, these were doomsaying socialists, if not, communists, who were bound and determined to bring the country down, and they predicted famine and ruin decades ago. I mean, all their predictions were wrong, and they predicted things based on what we call straight-line statistics, totally discounting any improvement that man would bring to any single scientific situation.
And, of course, they published a book back in 1971 called Limits of Growth.
Right.
And that was never a book that was written that was as inaccurate as that one. And yet, that is the basis of so much of the environmental movement today. And, of course, this anti-growth, really a literal anti-human agenda that is being carried out and, of course, is being promoted by the environmental movement across America. Well, we'll be back in just a moment here. But Dr. Jay Lehrer will invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Dr. Jay Lehrer from the Heartstone Institute, the Heartland Institute, and of course we're talking about the issue of global warming, and really this has been something that is accepted by the media, by, in fact, anybody who questions the wisdom of the fact that we're just soon going to be losing so many of our seaside villages and towns because of the rising level of the ocean. And yet, of course, in truth, there is no basis at all in this. Is there any evidence at all that with all this terrible global warming, that the oceans are rising to any significant degree?
Well, we know that the oceans have been rising about 7 inches a century for all of recorded history. I mean, we can go back at least 1,000 years and see that, in fact, the oceans have been rising about 7 inches every 100 years, accurately good measurements. And we don't know exactly why. Obviously, there has been a net loss of ice throughout the globe for at least 1,000 years. So we anticipate that that's still going on, but it could, if in fact we do warm in the next 100 years a few degrees, it's likely that that 7 inches of increase in sea level will probably decline, not increase.
All right, fine. Now, you know, certainly plants, though, you commented that plants in the arid areas do so much better as a result of the increased CO2, but certainly don't trees and really the flowers and, you know, our wheat crops and all this really flourish with an increased CO2 environment?
Absolutely. We have we've increased our yields on cropland in the United States about threefold in the last 40 years. Now, part of that is certainly due to improved farming practice and the use of agricultural chemicals and improved fertilizers, but a part of it is also due to the increased CO2. Our forest lands, our natural forest lands, have increased dramatically over the last 50 years. In the Northeast alone, we have about 25 million more acres of forest land than we had 50 years ago. The state of Vermont, as an example, at the 100 years ago, was 35% woodlands, and today it's 76% woodlands. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture has performed over 300 different experiments of growing a wide variety of plants and crops in atmospheres with increased CO2, where our normal CO2 content now is 350 parts per million. They will enclose an area and grow a wide variety of crops in 500 and 600 and 700 parts per million CO2. And in every single one of those experiments, without exception, the yields of the crops grown in an atmosphere of greater CO2 is greater. That's to say, they grow faster, and they grow more leaf, more wood stock, more fruit, whatever it is you're growing, grows better. And the Dutch have known this for many, many decades. For about 40 years now, the Dutch have raised all their tulips, which, as you know, they are famous for, in a dramatically increased CO2 environment. They pump CO2 into their greenhouses to get more and better tulips. So we've noted around the world there have been over 1,000 experiments growing crops in increased CO2, and invariably they show that CO2 is the lifeblood of plants. Give them more CO2, they grow better. So we're looking at something that is absolutely positive, that speaks to improved food supply and nutrition the world over, that's been made into something bad. It really is amazing that people have literally turned day into night, something that we should be pleased with. they have made people fearful of.
And yet, of course, you know, when you read the New York Times, which I do on a daily basis, article after article after article on global warming, and it's sort of like it was when we had the ozone hole. Oh, the ozone hole, we're just going to, we're all going to get skin cancer because of the ozone hole. And of course, if we could just do away with Freon, this ozone hole would go away. And of course, had nobody ever commented that DuPont had run out of their
patent on Freon,
right? And this was a scam. But they were able to convince the entire American population of the reality of the ozone hole. And then, of course, once we got Freon outlawed, well, I think it'd come up with new products, of course, that would be much more expensive. And then, of course, everybody was happy.
There was an ozone scare. It's still around. It's not totally over. There was, as you pointed out at the beginning of the program, a global cooling scare 20 years ago. That just didn't sell. Now it's global warming. I am hopeful that we'll do away with the global warming scam in the next decade or two. It will be replaced by something else. I mean, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, and these scams are really aimed at taking away our liberties and installing a socialist government run by elitist intellectuals, and they will foist one scam after another on society. Right now, global warming is working very well, and they'll run it as long as they can. When it weakens, they will come up with something else, but we'll never be rid of them. That socialism, I think, it will always exist in every culture, much as weeds grow in a garden, and those of us that want to retain our individual freedoms are always going to have to be battling, and it's just going to be the price we're going to have to pay for living in this yet free society.
Well, I think that the big problem is that people don't understand what freedom is all about. Freedom is not taken away by your neighbor, it's taken away by government. And, of course, liberty and limited government are synonymous. Our founding fathers established this country with limitations placed upon the power of the federal government so that the men people could live freely. And, of course, matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be handled at the state or the local level. That was the very essence of our free society. And, of course, the belief was that our freedoms came from God. Well, of course, the socialist really wants to counter that. They want all power centralized in government, because they're the ones who are going to control the government and buy and sell the politicians. And, of course, there is always this struggle between those who would be free and those who would be who want to control others. And that's where we are today. Right now, I think we have Jeannie on the line. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing?
I'm fine. This is a great conversation, and it ties in with tomorrow in Santa Cruz County. The Chamber of Commerce is putting on a Santa Cruz technology exhibition and symposium, and they're going to be talking about sustainable businesses and ethical businesses. And as you know, in Santa Cruz County, when we pass Measure C, I'm looking under Code 1690 that it says we have to stop global warming. And this is what's happening throughout the United States, and I want to ask Dr. Lehr about that, is we find who's behind getting all the businesses into this sustainable development and business practice is the Chamber of Commerce's. So how do we stop this? Because they're real heavy in Santa Cruz County right now.
And I think they're really heavy all across the country, and they seem to have a coordinated program moving their directors from one area to another until they've got the people willing to go along with their agenda, which, of course, is not going to help business, but only hinder it.
Well, I think that it just takes an awful lot of people to resist and stand up and state that you feel it's not worth hurting the economy to try to do things to reduce global warming that is unproven when we cannot predict the weather a week in advance. The concept of sustainability is a word that was developed also really to hide socialistic practices behind. The earth is so resilient and man is so inconsequential on it, we can't conceivably run out of anything. If you want to talk sustainability, you should understand that there is not a single natural resource on the planet that isn't less expensive today than it was when you were a child. Any precious metal, any mineral you can name is cheaper today than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. And it's because our greatest resource is between our ears. Our brains allow us to find things more efficiently, to refine things more efficiently. And when we run out of them, we replace them with better products. And so the earth provides us with resources that are automatically sustainable. Now, certainly waste, we don't want to waste things. We want to recycle things that make economic sense and not things that don't make economic sense. But the reason the chambers promote them is because it gives them more control over business. It's something for them to do, and the reason business buys into it is that they think the public have bought into it, and if they look sustainable and green, they think they'll have a market advantage. And if more and more people like yourself will stand up and just say, you know, you don't buy into it, eventually the companies that are wanting to advertise sustain and green will see that they're not getting more customers, especially if their products are costing more as a result, and the emphasis will be reduced. But we make it look like a motherhood and apple pie situation, and you can't win at the fair tomorrow in Santa Cruz. But all you can do is cast some seeds of doubt with a handful of people you speak to if you have the nerve to do it. It's going to take us 10 years at least to level the playing field of these various socialist movements that are anti-industry, anti-technology, and as Dr. Stan said at the outset, anti-people. And we can't, Rome wasn't built in a day, and you can't win the day tomorrow, but if you participate and you just simply state your opinion that you don't buy into it and you don't go along with the crowd, over time we can level the playing field and win. But it's going to take a lot of years, and people just have to be patient. We have not been speaking out for the last decade.
Well, you know, it's sort of like the little boy who stood up and said the king doesn't have any clothes on, and everybody looked at him and said, of course the king's got clothes on. Everybody knows he's got clothes on, and yet, of course, the king was as naked as the day he was born.
Absolutely.
And, of course, Jeannie, I hope you're going to be down there, and you're going to get him straightened out at that fair.
I might say to Dr. Lair, what we have found also in every community, they have formed what they have called in Santa Cruz County a Santa Cruz County Business Council. And this is the council that's behind the Chamber of Commerce and kind of maneuvering them into this sustainable business. They work also with United Way of doling out the money to companies that they think would do sustainable practices.
It sounds good, and it's not terrible. I mean, most of the sustainable practices are okay. I mean, they're not great. They're not particularly beneficial. They're really sales gimmicks, to be very honest. I mean, that's really all, you know, if capitalistic organizations want to paint themselves in a manner that they think will make them look more attractive. Hey, that's the capitalist system, and they have a right to do this. And most of these sustainable things are not terrible, and some of them are okay. None of them are important. They don't generally save money or resources. If they make people feel warm and fuzzy, there is some benefit to that. Although I will give you one example of sustainability. It is impossible to support a curbside recycling system in any town in America. If you are recycling your paper and your glass and your plastic, the only way it can be done is for public monies to subsidize that recycling, because these products cannot be sold for anywhere near the cost of collecting and cleaning and separating them. And so that if a community is doing curbside recycling, they're spending public funds to do it. Now, you've got to look at those public funds and say, gee, couldn't that money be better used to reduce homelessness, to reduce crime, to reduce drug addiction, alcoholism, teenage pregnancy and things and improve education. So money that is spent in these sustainable programs that utilize public funds, you've got to decide, aren't there really serious public problems in your community that could use those funds better?
All right.
Very well spoken, Dr. Lehr. Thank you.
Well, that's why I had him on again tonight, Jeannie. I've had him on several other times, and Dr. Lehr is certainly one of the clearest thinkers on this whole subject. But, you know, Dr. Lehr, I like to equate the word sustainability with socialism. When anybody talks about sustainable development, I said, look, you can only understand really what they're talking about if you simply substitute the word socialism for sustainable development. And then, of course, with socialism, every problem has a government solution. With sustainable development, every problem has a government solution. And, of course, when you have enough government solutions, you have no longer freedom. And, of course, they're using this to restrict property rights. But the biggest thing that is of concern to me is the attack on American industry and really driving American industries out of this country into foreign lands where they don't have all of the environmental restrictions, and as a result, progressively impoverishing the American people. I mean, certainly the unemployment is high now, but I don't think you've seen anything at all. I think it's going far, far higher. And, of course, as our industries move offshore, you know, many of the people who have their pensions tied into those industries may very well find that what they've been promised for their old age is no longer going to be valid. I mean, I'm really very concerned about the future of our society. Unless we can somehow reach the American people and make them understand they're being manipulated, they're being lied to. The New York Times, which is a wonderful newspaper, but it has a political agenda, and that agenda is a leftist agenda, and the same is true for the Washington Post, and it tells people what they want them to hear and puts such a slant and spin on it that it makes truth appear to be falsehood, and as it is with the case of global warming, falsehood appear to be truth.
Well, I fully agree with everything you said. Let me add one thing to it. A little earlier, you talked about the fact that, you know, government takes away freedoms. You've left out one element, and that is that people give away their freedoms in exchange for what they think will be greater security that the government will grant them. And that is a real false trade-off. But the government, while the government takes many of our freedoms away, much of our population give away these freedoms thinking they're getting something from the government in exchange. And people ought to be smart enough to know that the government is very limited in what it can do for the public. It can build good interstate highways. It can launch a good national defense. It can have a somewhat a decent post office, and it can have a judicial system that will settle disputes. It cannot do much more, and it attempts to do much more, and it requires the participation of the people to give away their freedoms, and that's the saddest thing we see. The government scares the people and then runs to the people and says, people, if you will give up a little freedom, we'll protect you from the latest scare. And we need more citizens with stronger backbones to recognize that this is not a good bargain.
Well, you can never give up your freedom because once you've given up freedom, it is never, never, never regained. So this is one of the problems we face today, not only in the issue of global warming, but, of course, the threat of domestic terrorism. But we've got somebody on the line here. Let's see who it is. Who's on the line?
This is Alex from Marina.
Hi, Alex from Marina. How are you?
Just fine. Well, I'm trying to connect to the Institute of the Constitution with what you're talking about tonight, but there is some parallels here we can draw.
All right. Now, Alex is putting on an Institute on the Constitution over in the Marina area. When is that meeting going to be, Alex, and how can people reach you and get information on how they can come to your sessions and learn the secret of the American Constitution, which is no longer taught, and yet which is the very essence of our freedom?
Exactly. The number to call is toll-free 877-448-5798. Our next meeting will be next Monday night, March 3rd. That's at 7:30 in Marina at Marina First Assembly Church, 3185 DeForest Road. If you call the number I just gave, I'll repeat it again. You can get more information on when future classes are going to be. And that's toll-free 877-448-5798 for the Institute of the Constitution. It's a free workshop open to everybody.
God bless you. Thanks so very much for calling, and I encourage people to go. Thank you so much,
Dr.
Alex. And I want to, let's just take a few more minutes with Dr. Jay Lehrer, because I think that this is such an important issue. And of course, until people already can discuss this issue of global warming intelligently, and I think it's so important people remember what Dr. Lehrer said. There are 350 parts of carbon dioxide per million. And of course, if you calculate that out, it's a carbon dioxide is only an infinitesimal part of the our atmosphere. And then, of course, if you even put it into the realm of the greenhouse gases, it's not more than 4%. And of course, most of the greenhouse gases certainly are water. We have no control over that. So, you know, what they're doing is, it doesn't really matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincingly enough, unfortunately, people will believe. But remember that 350 parts per million, and then put this into its overall perspective and learn how to ask people how 350 parts per million, if it went up to 500 parts per million, is really going to create real problems in our society. What would you tell people, how would you tell people to address this, Dr. Lehrer?
Well, I would tell them, again, I want to repeat that I want to offer a free subscription to our monthly publication, Environment and Climate News, by having people go on our website, www.heartland.org, and get our publication so they can get some very simple basic data to talk about it. But I always like to focus on the fact that everybody knows that the weatherman on TV is pretty good about predicting tomorrow's weather and not bad 2 or 3 days out, but when he tries a week out, we know how inaccurate it is. It drops from 90% tomorrow to about 20% 7 days out, and of course beyond that it becomes the joke of the farmer's almanac, and we're trying to change our entire economic system by putting great increases in prices on our fuel by limiting CO2, which is going to have a dramatically negative impact on our entire economy based on weather predictions 100 years out. I mean, it really is absurd. We don't know enough about it to shoot ourselves in the foot economically. And while the government did not buy into the Kyoto Treaty, it is more and more around the edges promoting things that will put American industry at a disadvantage. And of course, as you pointed out, that's what the rest of the world wants. They want to see our industries move offshore. And so that just common sense is what people need to apply in these discussions. And I think they can convince a lot of their friends and neighbors that a lot of this does not make sense and is really aimed at just gaining more government control over industry and individuals.
And I really think that people have to realize that there are people in the United States who hate America, and what a wonderful way to destroy this country by destroying its industrial base. Is there a telephone number people can call if they don't have a...
Yes, there is. The telephone number is area code 312-377-4000. 312, it's in Chicago, 377-4000.
Well, I want to thank you so very, very much for being with us tonight. Do you have just one parting thought for our listeners, and I'll let you go?
Well, I'll just repeat a statement I said before, that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, and when you hear things that don't make sense to you, usually they aren't right, and don't buy into anything that everybody is talking about is gaining too many followers. You have to wonder what the reasons are, what are the motivations. use your common sense and realize that everybody is smart enough to figure these things out, and don't let the wool be pulled over their eyes.
God bless you. Thanks so very much for being
with us,
Dr. Lehr.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Dr. Jay Lehr, and again, that telephone number is 312-377-4000. 312-377-4000. You get a year's free subscription. That's an offer that's pretty hard to pass up. It's heartland.org if you want to go up on the Internet. But ladies and gentlemen, this is a scam. America is under attack today from many sides. And of course, why? Because America was once a great Christian nation, and there is a conscious, organized effort to destroy it, and they're using global warming for that purpose. So I hope that you'll stand with us. We've had Dr. Lehr on a number of my other programs. I wanted you to hear him tonight because he's certainly the most articulate spokesman I've heard who can explain all of these scare issues that are being brought up over and over again to intimidate you and, of course, to get you simply to be quiet and go along with the agenda. The agenda is the destruction of your freedom, the destruction of America as we've known it. Well, this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you, if you're out there listening to our programs, will agree that there is a problem and you'd like to help us do what we do 5 hours every day, and that is try to reach the American people with the truth about what's going on. And if you would like to join us, why, it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and of course our latest newsletter, will be the talk given by Senator Robert Byrd on the 12th of February dealing with the coming war. And of course, Senator Byrd and I would disagree on many issues. He's much more in support of internationalism, the United Nations, and government interference in our lives. But on the issue of the coming war, his thoughts are my thoughts, his fears are my fears, and I reproduced most of his letter. I've edited out a little of his diatribe on a few things against the Bush administration. Not that some of the criticism isn't justified, but because it detracts from a very, very scholarly approach to what lies ahead. And ladies and gentlemen, whenever there is a action, there is a counteraction. There's something called blowback. And when, of course, our government has attacked and undermined the freedom of people in other countries, why, many times they respond in kind with us. And so our plea is, of course, if you are concerned about your freedom, if you're concerned about what's going on, why, get the information, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy of my February newsletter. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, do you really think God will ever bless this country again? And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, when we'll be back with you again. Oh, I guess it'll be Thursday evening, because tomorrow Pastor Doug will be here. So until Thursday, Dr. Stan, good night. May the Lord be with you. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls. We hope this evening to have with us Randy Thomason to keep us appraised of what's going on up there in Sacramento. And if we can't get Randy, we'll go to Brad Dacus. And then, of course, we'll have Barbara Cole as our guest for the last segment of this program. And Barbara, of course, works with the immigration issues in Southern California. And, of course, we are being invaded. You know, it is really... I don't know if you noticed, it was on the Grammy Awards, that they had their first Spanish-only ad. And what they're basically trying to do is very subtly, cleverly trying to, just get us into this idea we're a bilingual country. Why? Because that's always been the agenda. They've always wanted to have a multicultural society so they could play one group against the other and, of course, destroy the Christian, Judeo-Christian foundation of this once great nation. And that's why, of course, they changed the immigration laws back in 1965. And they did it during the Vietnam War when people wouldn't be noticing what was happening. And that's why when Senator Hayakawa tried to get English-only language here in the United States, English is the official language of the United States, why, of course, he was blocked at every turn. And why would anybody not want English to be the language of our country? Why, very simply, because they had a different agenda. And, of course, they wanted this sort of a divided country. They've known exactly what they're doing because America's been under attack for a long, long, long time. Well, we've got Brad Dacus on the line from the Pacific Justice Institute. Brad, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, doing great, Dr. Stanley.
Well, tell us what's going on in your field, certainly of jurisprudence and protecting the Christian population here from really a direct onslaught from the anti-Christian forces that are out there doing everything they can to make our lives miserable.
Well, they're certainly doing it. In fact, they're doing it in particular for a wonderful gentleman named Miguel Estrada. Miguel Estrada is being nominated by George W. Bush to serve on the D.C. Appellate Circuit Court, but a handful of Democrats, very liberal Democrats, are trying to block it. Now, they're not trying to vote against him. They're trying to issue a filibuster. They're threatening a filibuster to prevent any kind of vote, up or down. And of course, that's thwarting their responsibility under the Constitution to either affirm or deny a nomination by the president. This is also the first time ever in United States history that we've ever had a filibuster being carried out or threatened to be carried out like this for an appellate court nominee.
Well, of course, you know why that is because the appellate court that Miguel Estrada is being nominated for has been seen in the past as a stepping stone into the Supreme Court. And, of course, the people on the other side, those people who would establish an authoritarian society and further erode the fabric of our Constitution, realize that the Supreme Court is certainly the bulwark of our freedom. And
right.
If they can get, they can keep people out there who don't, who believe in the Constitution, as apparently Miguel Estrada does, people who want to interpret the Constitution as it was written, rather than as those people who want the all-powerful state would have it, then of course they can block a return to a free society and maintain our continued drift towards socialism. That's really what it's all about.
Right.
But I would think that every, of course, Democrat would be ashamed, and I think that any Democrat who goes along along with that, has to realize they're thwarting the will of the country and they are violating the oath that they've sworn to uphold the Constitution and defend it from every enemy, foreign and domestic, from enemies, foreign and domestic. Right. We've got an awful lot of them sitting right there in the United States Senate, and nobody's got the guts to say it.
Right, and what's really serious about this is that if they're successful in filibustering this judicial nominee, then they'll be they'll do it again and again and again, and they'll thwart our whole judicial branch for having the important qualified nominees that we need to have, and our system is already overloaded. So I'm sure Saddam Hussein would be most happy to see what his what the Democrats are doing to thwart our one of our major branches of government. In addition to that, they're also complaining that the Solicitor General's office has not handed over confidential legal opinions that he's given to the president, both to Clinton and to President Bush. He served under Clinton also, and of course that would totally violate the confidentiality that is so imperative that that presidents have to be able to have upfront and unbridled opinions about exactly what the law is and where it should go. And so it's a real attack on both the executive branch, the judicial branch, and the Constitution.
Well, I think that I hope people will remember in November of next year exactly how these senators voted, and of course that the people who are trying to thwart our constitutional system of government will be replaced. That's really all we can do. But of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, get started now, get involved in the process, and start looking for a candidate, and make sure, don't wait until somebody else has picked the candidates for you, and you have the choice between Tweedledum and Tweedledee. Is there anything else you want to talk about, Brad?
Well, just that if they want to look at the article that I put together, the op-ed piece, it's on our webpage at pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org, and it's very detailed. And at the bottom of it, they can click, go right to senate.gov, and contact and give a piece of their mind to the two senators in California, wherever they may be. And I strongly recommend this is a time for people to speak out. I don't say it unless I really think it's going to have an impact, and we really believe that it will have an impact if people speak out.
All right. Now, basically what you want people is to go to your website at pacificjustice.org, and there's a place there when they can send emails to both Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein.
Well, if they go to the article, at the bottom of the article, the op-opinion editorial, called When Politics is No Longer Politics, at the bottom, they can click on to senate.gov, or they can go straight to senate.gov, and there it's real easy just to make contact with both of those senators and let them know that their objection to their thwarting the constitutional process of letting this man have his day and have his vote in the U.S. Senate like all other nominees. And the fact that he's the first Honduran immigrant to come to America and graduate with honors from Harvard Law School, et cetera, and that he's being treated like this in an unprecedented way is a really sad stain upon our Senate in the process.
I think it shows, I hate to say it, but it sounds maybe just a little racism there on the part of Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. Anyway, thank you very much. So again, it's pacificjustice.org. Do you have a telephone number in case people would like to get in touch with you personally or they do not have access to a computer?
You bet. It's 888-305-9129. That's 888-305-9129.
That's 888-305-9129. Thanks very much, Brad. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr.
Bye bye. Okay, fine. Well, I'm going to ask our producer this evening to just go ahead and get Barbara Coe on the line for us, and I'll clear this. So give Barbara a call. I bet I'll be glad to come on with us a few minutes early. I've known Barbara for a number of years, and she's on the front lines of the battle in Southern California. Now, here in Northern California, certainly we have a fair number of immigrants. Some of our people coming in from Mexico are excellent citizens, and they value their freedom, but we have a lot of people coming in here illegally who are not here because they want to be Americans. They're here because they want to exploit the system, take advantage of the welfare, and of course this is being encouraged by the Mexican government. In fact, they're sending people up here with tuberculosis, with known tuberculosis. They don't want to treat them, so they send them up here and they give them the address of the local hospital to go to get their tuberculosis planted, treated. They actually are sending people who go to hospitals in Mexico that have no money, that people have no money, they have no insurance. So they put them in ambulances and they send them up to American hospitals where by federal law they have to be admitted and treated. You can't send anybody away from a hospital without violating the federal law. And then, of course, the hospitals are going bankrupt or they have to raise your rates to pay for the illegal immigrants who are actively being brought in here with the full consent of the Mexican government to attack our medical system. Well, here on the front lines of the battle is Barbara Coe. Hi, Barbara. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I was just telling our listeners about this game that they play of putting people into ambulances and bringing them across the border and taking them and dumping them into our hospitals. Isn't there anything that can be done about that?
Oh, of course, and it could be done very, very quickly if our federal government would issue an order to secure that border and comply with our immigration laws. These are illegal aliens. Our immigration laws mandate that they are to be immediately deported, period, end of discussion.
But why would they allow an illegal alien to come across the border in an ambulance? That doesn't make sense.
Well, they'll probably get well, and then, of course, they will be able to vote, and they can also contribute to the cheap labor, which is also another blow to our country of our own citizens.
Well, now, of course, the tragic part of this whole scenario is the fact that our government is doing everything they can to encourage illegal immigration, violating our own laws. And, of course, a lot of this is being funded by the Ford Foundation, which has actually organized groups for the illegal aliens. And I'm sure you know Maldeva, LULAC, various organizations. And the Ford Foundation, that, of course, is one of the largest holders of Ford Motor Company stock and has been for many years, is actually funding the demise and destruction of our country. And all I can say is, isn't it too bad that Ford Motor Company may very well go belly up in a couple of years? Gee, wouldn't that be a terrible tragedy?
Wouldn't that be a terrible tragedy? And wouldn't I just want to be there to see it? And also, in addition to the Ford Foundation, don't forget, Dr. Stan, our own tax monies in federal and state grants. In fact, to quote this one very astute lady, we are paying for the shovel to dig our own grave with our own tax dollars.
And I know that, and of course we can thank Governor Davis for that. But how is the effort to recall Governor Davis coming?
That is moving forward. I just wish the proponents would all get together so there would be only one recall petition. That is still being determined, I understand, as to whether or not they're all going to get together. I have been told first yes and then no. But,
well, it sounds to me like Governor Davis is probably promoting his own recall to split the vote, split the petition, to confuse the issue, to divide the funds so that that he can't be recalled. Do you think he might be just smart enough to do that?
Oh, I think he's capable of anything, absolutely anything. And, no, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what he might have a hand in it, Dr. Stan, because he has certainly done everything else, underhanded that he possibly can. So I think that's always a possibility, but hopefully in this instance, and I am told, that the three different proponents are going to coordinate their efforts and have a single petition out there, and I think it will pass by a landslide.
Well, of course, the thing is that Governor Davis has certainly thwarted the will of the people of this state when, of course, when Prop 187 was passed by a significant majority here, and that was, of course, to begin cutting off the illegal immigrants, not the people who are here legally, but illegally, from exploiting our welfare and our schools and everything else, and certainly our medical system, and of course, even though it was passed by the people, why it was held up by a federal judge who misused, prostituted her position as a federal judge to delay it until Governor Davis got in, and then Governor Davis refused, of course, to appeal this to the federal government to show that Prop 887 was perfectly legal. Now, that, of course, was, but you have to understand the fascist element really isn't concerned about the rule of the people or the will of the people. They have a political agenda. It has to do with the establishment of an authoritarian society, and Governor Davis went right along with that. That was the most amazing thing. And where was the outcry from the people?
Well, there was an outcry, but being grassroots people, because, you know, that was a grassroots effort from the get-go. And the grassroots people who made it happen did not have, of course, Ford Foundation funding or federal grants to be able to do anything about it legally.
Or, of course, Governor Davis having this money of the state and the Attorney General and the legal facilities of our state, he misused them to thwart the will of the people. Barbara, are you on a regular hardline telephone? Are you, it's just a little brassy tone to your voice.
No, I am on a portable phone, but it's the only one I have, Dr. Smith.
You don't have a regular telephone?
Not one that's hardline, no.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, then we'll get by with it then. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And our guest this evening is Barbara Cole, and she's on the front lines of this battle. Well, what are some of the other issues? I understand that there's a very conscious effort to do away with these cards that have been issued by the Mexican government through the consulate cards to actually circumvent the identification. These are illegal immigrants who are given these consular cards so they can get driver's license and all the other benefits living here as if they were legal immigrants. And our government has done absolutely nothing to stop that. In fact, it seems to almost to be actively encouraging it. Is there any chance that the Bush administration will take a stand for our side instead of consistently undermining the stability of our society?
Well, yes, but let me back up just a little bit, Dr. Stan. This was authorized and approved by our very own U.S. Treasury Department. And, of course, we know where that authorization came from. It came from the top.
All right, fine.
President Bush.
Now, this is what do you call these cards?
Matricula consular. But, of course, it's, in layman's terms, it's the illegal alien Mexican ID card. And I'll tell you, Dr. Stan, it's one of the most frightening things that we have ever encountered, because this is a primary tool for terrorists, because the stipulations, regardless of race, ethnicity, or physical appearance, there are never any questions asked. The applicants can apply for as many of these cards and as many names as they want.
Now, wait a minute. Where do they get them from, though?
Well, they can get it from the Mexican consulate or the Mexican consulate representatives who are traveling in mobile caravans. Some of them are even outside of banks in tents.
Well, don't they have to actually be Mexican citizens to get these, or can
anybody?
Absolutely
not.
They don't have to be a Mexican citizen?
No, they do not, Dr. Stan. And there is, as I was saying, there is no verification of the true identity of the person, the place or date of birth, criminal background check, nothing. And also, there is no fingerprint required, which, of course, ensures that the applicant cannot be cross-checked against any U.S. criminal databases or any of the very few computerized criminal databases in Mexico.
Well, you know, so, I think that this should really be done. As I see this whole thing coming down the line, I think that what they're doing is creating a problem so they can justify then implementing the DNA of these various means of identifying as iris scans, fingerprints, all of these things. In other words, they create this impossible situation so they say, well, now the government's going to solve this problem that we've created, and we're going to have every American with an ID card. We're going to have their all their records on file. It's all going to be on this little chip on this card, and only American citizens can have this. But in the meantime, they're going to create a terrible, terrible problem here. And only by creating the problem will the American people be willing to go along with a solution. And I'm sure they all have a solution. These people are not stupid. They know what they're doing. They just got to beguile the average American here into thinking, oh, just this happened simply by accident. Sucks. We just don't know who was responsible.
Oh, yes, I know. The motives are so ulterior. It is absolutely unbelievable. And it's like I said, this is a primary tool for terrorists.
Right.
Because you do have to present a birth certificate, but of course you can get it up on any corner, $30, 30 minutes, you know, and then hand them $28 and you're home. Absolutely no problem. And of course the terrorists are laughing because what better way to remain in the country, and then of course it's absolutely impossible to identify them because who knows what name they're using.
Well, now, of course, have they done anything to close our borders to prevent the terrorists from coming into this country? We know, for instance, they built a massive fence between Afghanistan and Pakistan to control the Al-Qaeda terrorists. You know, we paid for that with our funding. Have they done anything comparable to that here in the United States?
Well, of course, there's the, I believe it's 12 to 13 miles of fence down along the around San Ysidro, and extends about, several hundred feet out into the ocean. But that's about it. If you look past that, all you see, sometimes there's not even barbed wire fence.
Well, of course, the thing is that we can build one in Afghanistan, but we can't build one in the United States. Gee, I wonder why that is.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's just costly to protect our own borders, but they can certainly protect the borders of other countries. Absolutely amazing. So, you know, the absolute travesty of it is so blatant, and the betrayal of the citizens is so blatant, it is absolutely incredible.
Well, you know, one of the most interesting things is this Malvo, who was with the sniper Muhammad. You know, he was actually arrested as an illegal immigrant. Come here illegally, and instead of deporting him, they immediately released him on his own recognizance. Now, what sort of insanity is that?
The same insanity as the other people who come in here, foreign invaders who come in here and murder, rape, rob our own citizens. And what is so incredible is that, of course, 9-1-1 was a horrible, horrible and mass massacre. However, on the flip side of the coin, several thousand people every year, U.S. citizens, are also murdered by illegal aliens, and there's never a mention of that. And, of course, I'm sure your listeners are aware of Chris Egley, which was murdered by an illegal alien Mexican smuggler.
He was a border guard, wasn't he?
No, he was a park ranger.
Park ranger, okay.
Yeah, he was assisting Border Patrol in trying to identify and apprehend these drug smugglers as they came across the border. And, of course, he was gunned down in cold blood. And to this day, President Bush, nor anyone from the White House, with one exception, Representative Tom Tancredo, has even bothered to speak with the parents of this young man or express their condolences.
Well, of course, now, what happened, there were a group of people down in Arizona or Texas and so were trying to guard the border. In other words, these were Americans who were sort of being deputized among themselves like a posse to try to stop this massive invasion, which is being encouraged by the officials in Washington, D.C., both of the Republican and the Democrat parties. So what has happened to them?
Well, there's two different groups, but they are working very, very closely together. And, in fact, the founder of one of them is going to be our keynote speaker tomorrow night at our meeting. We are absolutely thrilled. He's coming in from Arizona. His name is Chris Simcott. And those people, I'll tell you right now, they live the horrors of this illegal alien invasion that we only read about every day of their lives.
Now, these are what, ranchers down along the border?
Absolutely. And those ranchers are just, it is incredible, Dr. Stan, because not only is their property being destroyed, but the families are being threatened. 13-year-old kids cannot even go outside without being armed, carrying a weapon. They're threatened on the way to school. The parents have to take them to school or else lay their lives on the line. Their pets, they slit their watchdog's throat so that they can't bark. They slaughter their livestock and then eat a few steaks and then just leave them there to die, agonizing death. The story goes on and on and on. These people are doing what our federal government won't do.
Now, of course, the federal government, when they arrest these people, they just send them back again. They do not imprison them or punish them for, violating our laws. In fact, everything is being done not only not to punish them, but to reward them. Here in the state of California, why, of course, if you are here as an illegal alien, you can actually go to college far cheaper than a citizen of the state of Arizona who travels to California because they want to get an education here. They have to pay out-of-state fees. Here in California, if you're here illegally, you don't have to pay out-of-state fees. You get the cheaper rate, which is subsidized by the taxpayer. What's wrong with this scenario?
Thanks again, thanks to Governor Davis, who passed the bill 540. It's absolutely incredible. It all comes under the category that if you are a criminal, illegal alien, and all illegal aliens are criminals in violation of federal immigration laws, then, hey, you're the honored guest. If you're a United States citizen, a law-abiding, loyal citizen, then you're second class. And that is happening constantly. And, of course, we hear about it throughout our nation. Hospitals are closing because of the deluge of illegal aliens that are coming in. Our schools are in shambles. California used to be at the top of the list educationally, and now they are second from the bottom.
No, I thought that Governor Davis was getting our rates up, or did they just dumb down the test to make it look better so we could get reelected?
Oh, of course they did.
And of course, that was the greatest scam of our. We had a real good candidate running for governor on the Republican ticket. His name was Bill
Simon.
No. It was the other fellow, Bill Jones. He was
Secretary
of State.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. He was a real honest to goodness conservative. Simon, of course, was a good friend of Reardon, certainly if you ever talked to him, he wasn't a conservative at all. He was run to defeat Bill Jones, and of course, this whole thing, this guy, nobody could have run such a bad campaign unintentionally unless he were trying to get Governor Davis reelected.
That's only about the third time I've ever heard anybody say that, Dr. Stana, and I thought that from the beginning. To me, it was so very apparent.
But of course, the people are not sophisticated enough how the game is played, and
right.
So they ran two candidates to split the three against Bill Jones. Bill Jones was a good man.
Yes, he was
a good conservative. He actually did a massive mailing at the end. I got my copy of it 10 days after the election. In other words, somebody got to the post office and held up that mailing so he wouldn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
That's how the game is played. And until you understand that these people are unscrupulous, they don't believe in fairness or right or legality, they believe in winning at any cost. And the one thing they did not want was the people of California to have a choice between a corrupt governor and an honest-to-goodness Christian conservative.
Absolutely. And, of course, Simon's campaign looked like it was, it seemed like it started off on a fairly positive foot to a certain degree until just shortly after it got started. If you recall, President Bush made a visit to California. And from that point on, it was downhill. So there's all these little ins and outs. But, of course, we all know what the bottom line was. And let's not forget that the illegal aliens were rallied far and through the entire state of California. there were people in parking lots filling out registration forms, and of course you can't ask their legal status here, because then the person who asks it will get arrested. And they were filling out the forms in market parking lots and saying, you know, fine, you know, here's your absentee ballot. We'll fill it out for you. All you have to do is sign it.
That's the democracy. That's what democracy is really all about, isn't it? Everybody votes, legally illegal. And, of course, it doesn't matter who you vote for. Just vote for our candidate. We'll be back in just a moment with Barbara Cole. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Barbara Cole. And Barbara, how can people get in touch with you and your organization?
Very, very simply, Dr. Stan. In fact, they can do it toll-free. It's area code 877-NO-ILLEGALS, and translated into numbers, that's 877-664-5534, and we'd love to hear from them, because we can give them a great deal of information, and information that they can use from the comfort of their own homes to start fighting this. And we are making progress, Dr. Stan. We really are. Congressman Tom Tancredo gave out an exciting announcement on Sunday. This illegal alien Mexican ID card, he has put enough pressure on the White House, he and his constituents, as to where the Treasury Department has been ordered to re-review this, and very possibly there will be a federal directive issued to no longer accept these scam ID cards. So we're very excited about that. And we have all the tools that people can use to support Congressman Tancredo. Just give us a call, and we'll be happy to get them to you.
Well, now, for our listeners out there, Congressman Tancredo is from the Colorado area, and he's been certainly championing the cause of trying to close our borders and stop illegal immigration. Boy, the local newspaper there went after him, did everything they could to keep him from getting reelected, and did he do pretty well in his district?
Yes, almost 77%, and that was even after Karl Rove, President Bush's advisor, as I'm sure you've heard, warned him to never darken the White House door again.
In other words, why was that?
Well, because President Bush does not want this deluge stopped, Dr. Stan, and he'll do anything that he possibly can do to ensure it continues, because if troops were on our borders, the Border Patrol people have advised that those borders could be totally secured within a matter of 10 days to 2 weeks.
But of course, you know, they're not trying to stop the terrorists from coming in. They're not trying to stop the illegals from coming in. They want the multicultural society. They want a divided society. And you have to understand, this is bipartisan treason on the part of the leaders of both political parties, because there's a much bigger agenda. It's one united world, one united people, one united religion. Won't it be wonderful for those who survive the coming period of turmoil and crisis that I feel is lying ahead? And of course, until the American people understand that we have a one-party system with two branches, and there really is not a great deal of difference between the two political parties. In fact, the Republican Party, instead of being the party of limited spending, is now the party of the biggest budgets and the biggest budget deficits we've ever had. They actually went to, just 9 months ago, we raised the national debt level by almost $500 billion, and we've already that far in debt. They're going to have to raise the debt again, the national debt level, from 6.4 to 7 trillion, something like that. We are going to be really destroy this nation by debt, and that's part of the program. Right now, of course, it's not costing us too much for interest, but wait till they have to raise the interest rates up again, and pretty soon you'll be putting so much money out for interest, there won't be anything for any of the rest of the infrastructure, and certainly nothing to pay back all the money they've stolen from Medicare and the Medicare and the Social Security Fund. So they know exactly what they're doing. They just want the public to know, and they say what we want to hear, and of course they make all these very profound and winning statements, and they even give occasional good vote on the abortion issue, because we've divided the society on that, and it's amazing how incredibly naive most Americans are. Have you noticed that?
Oh, it's absolutely incredible, and so many times you will try to discuss this issue with people because, of course, again, you look at the bottom line, which is out-of-control immigration, because that's one of the primary tools of the New World Order globalists. They're the sheeple, which, of course, is a favorite word, and they absolutely either look at you like you're insane, or the bottom line is, yeah, I know, I don't want to know anymore. Talk about a state of denial, but like I said, 9/11 woke a lot of people up, and of course the disasters that are occurring in our schools, in our hospitals, the crime rate, the whole scenario, a lot more people are finally waking up, Dr. Stan, and I feel very, very hopeful.
Well, of course, the thing is that it is affecting people in Southern California a lot more than in Northern California, and because of the compartmentalization of our society and the control of the major newspapers, why we don't hear in Northern California what's really going on in Southern California, or get the feeling that your people have there. Mm-hmm. Can you get any impression of how people are feeling from the talk shows down there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They are absolutely scared to death. Both, of course, because of this impending war with Iraq. But long before that ever came on the horizon, people are scared to go out at night. There's areas down here becoming larger all the time that I'll tell you right now, when the sun goes down, the people go in.
But of course, I mean, that's hard on the good Mexican people, too. I mean, they got a lot of good Spanish-speaking people who are, they're here, they want to be Americans, they're here legally, and of course, they're trapped in this same system with everybody else. Are you getting much support from the people who are here legally, the Spanish immigrants?
Oh, absolutely. We have so many members of the organization, and do you know what? Like you said, they are being victimized even worse than some of the rest of us. And
because they're going to have to live in these areas where you can't go out at night.
That's right. And, of course, they speak out. I never cease to be amazed at their courage. We have one lady that is right in the forefront of fighting this. Her life has been threatened. Her children's lives have been threatened. And she just gets on her knees, prays God for protection, and goes right ahead. In fact, she's going to be with me and two other of our members. We're going to Washington in March, and she is going to be one of our primary speakers when we're talking to elected officials about where they stand on the future of this country and the future of our children.
Well, now, are you going to have hearings back there, or how are you going to get a chance to talk to anybody?
Well, there are two ways. Number one, we're going with Roger Hitchcock, a talk show host, conservative talk show host, down in San Diego, and he broadcasts live every year from Washington. He calls it his Hold Their Feet to the Fire journey to Washington every year. So I will be on a part of his show announcing our thousands upon thousands of postcards protesting a further amnesty for illegal aliens. And then, of course, during the days that we're there, we will be lobbying constantly. We are filling up our schedule. We'll be in a different office every hour on the hour.
Well, okay, so that's really exciting. What's happening to the trauma centers down there? I heard that many of the trauma centers in the Los Angeles basin are just having to close. They can't afford to keep open because of the deluge of illegal aliens, of course, with no insurance, no payment. And, of course, I can remember when I was practicing medicine, having people from well-to-do families in Mexico come up here to get their medical care because it didn't cost them anything here. Down in Mexico, they'd have to pay for it.
Oh, of course. Of course, and we just saw another example of that, of the girl who died after the heart and lung transplant, and there are hospitals in Mexico, of course, that do that. In fact, it's a specialty at the University of Mexico, University of Mexico in Mexico City, and yet they came to the United States so that there would be no charge for this multi-million dollar operation. And now, of course, as I'm sure you've heard, two things. Number one, when they asked if they would donate the parts, you know, for future transplants of this girl, they said no. And number two, they are suing the university where the operation was performed. So it's pretty incredible. And as to the trauma centers, yes, that is a very true story. At this point in time, there were 23 trauma centers. Of the 23, there are only 11 that are still open. The rest have declared bankruptcy and closed.
And this is in the Los Angeles County area?
Yes.
Is this the whole basin or just Los Angeles?
This is the L.A. basin.
All right, fine. And, of course, half of them are closed. These are very highly specialized areas. And that puts an additional burden on the rest of them. But without funding, you can't keep going.
Okay.
And, of course, if you get into the situation, you've got a lot of non-paying patients, then you have to boost the price up so high that it drives up the cost for the people who are paying the bill or their insurance companies and drives up your insurance. And so every illegal alien who comes into this country, drives up your insurance rates even all the higher. And the average individual doesn't understand this. He doesn't understand that we are all involved in what's going on, whether we want to be or not.
Absolutely. And you would think people would look at their wallet, even if they don't care about their kids, which you'd think would be their first priority. At least look at your wallet and look what's going out and listen as to how much it's costing you financially. It's absolutely incredible.
Well, are they still talking about, splitting off California and New Mexico and Arizona and creating us land?
Oh, of course. That is still on the front burner. And the amnesty would be one of the major tools. And I'm sure you've also heard, Dr. Sen, that on the situation with the UN, on whether or not to back President Bush on his wanting to go into war with Iraq, Mexico is in the same category as the other nations, France, Germany primarily, refusing to concur with this effort. However, they have added a stipulation that they would give him a yes vote in exchange for amnesty for the millions of illegal alien Mexicans now in the U.S.
Well, if he gives them that for a yes vote, why, I won't say what I feel, but he has no right, of course, to destroy this country so that he can have his little war.
That's right. And it's so ridiculous, and it's just amazing that people cannot see past this barrage of propaganda. How can you go into war with another country and, just like you said, build fences to protect their borders and refuse to protect your own country?
Unless you have another agenda. And, of course, my contention is that the coming war, contrary to what everybody believes, has nothing to do with Saddam Hussein being a wicked man, which he is. Right. Has nothing to do with the fact he mistreats his people, which he does.
Right.
Has nothing to do with the fact that he may very well at some time in the future give chemical or biological weapons to Al-Qaeda or other terrorists, which he may, but I don't believe that's what it's all about. Or that sometime in the future he might attack us if he ever got the weapons to do it, because if he ever did, we'd simply drop a nuclear bomb and that'd be the end of Iraq. No, it has nothing to do with the fact that Saddam Hussein tried to kill George Herbert Walker Bush in 1992. No, it really has nothing to do with Israel. It has to do with a plan for hegemony, for American domination of the world. And if you doubt that, and you're out in the listening audience, you go to the Project for a New American Century. You can get it on your Google or your search engine, Project for a New American Century, their plan in 1993, where you had Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld signing their statement of principles. It's right up on the webpage. And, of course, the whole thing was American leadership for this new one global, the global international order, or the international order that they plan. And then, of course, you can read their Rebuilding America's Defenses document, where they tell how we're going to have our troops all over the world, and we're, in essence, going to rule the world. I mean, it's the most incredible plan, and yet the American people honestly think we're going to war because Saddam Hussein has something to do with Al-Qaeda. Actually, he's not even a fundamentalist Muslim. He's an apostate. He only uses the Muslim faith because he's in a Muslim nation. But, you know, the American people are so gullible. It doesn't matter how something ridiculous it is. If it's said often enough, why people will believe, especially when, of course, the man falls a false flag, let's put it that way. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you agree or disagree, if you have strong feelings about the problem as far as illegal immigration and what this concept of multiculturalism is going to do to this nation, this once united nation, and of course this is part of a carefully conceived program, you know, you go on to the, you know, you're going to talk to PG&E or something, you know, and they want to know whether you want your message in English or Spanish. You many times go onto the net and they want to know whether you want to ask in English or Spanish. You know, everything is try to create this impression we are to be a bilingual country. And yet most Spanish people who are here legally really want to speak English, don't they, Barbara?
Absolutely.
And they want their children trained in English, and yet they're the people within the educational system that are trying to keep these people, these kids, from learning English because they want to be able to manipulate them in this whole geopolitical agenda.
And they get more money for them per child. Let's not forget that. When they have limited English proficiency, then it's a couple of thousand more per child that they get, again, our tax dollars.
Now, is that coming from the federal or state government?
Both.
You know?
Both.
Well, I think the federal government ought to just quit putting the money out. We ought to have one language. We ought to put everybody into that language. And, you know, when you're a child, you can pick up the language so very, very quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But, of course, they have to work very hard to keep kids from learning how to read properly. They have to keep kids work very hard to keep children from learning the English language, but they've been able to do that with a great deal of effort on their part, and that way they can divide our nation.
Oh, absolutely. The California Teachers Association, as you may recall, were one of the major opponents of a Prop 187 because they could see all those millions of dollars that went to the administrators and not the kids, of course. The kids don't profit. The administrators do.
But, of course, Barbara, really this, I don't think, reflects the average teacher. I think it reflects a small minority that has been able to gain the reins of power of organized medicine, of organized teaching, just as they've gained the reins of power of the nurses' organizations and the reins of power of the medical organization and the reins of power of the dental organization. Most dentists don't want to be involved in politics, nor do doctors or do nurses or do teachers. But but there are those that have a political agenda, and they're the ones that push one another into ever higher positions of power, because it's all about control. It's just like they have in government. It's all about control of other people.
That's right, and it's called follow the money and follow the vote. And, of course, our own elected officials, that's where the bottom line is, our very own elected officials, for those reasons, are the culprits, are totally responsible for all of this tragedy and trauma that is being, shoved on loyal, good, loyal American citizens of every race and ethnicity, and as far as we're concerned, the blood of our people is on their hands. Those are the people who are responsible, and those are the people that, please, wake up America and get them out of office.
Well, I think that, Kirsch, right now is the time to start thinking about getting candidates that will be running next year. And,
absolutely,
of course, they have to start building name recognition. They have to start building an organization. They have to start building their precinct organizations. If they're really serious about winning, it takes a long time and a long-range plan. But, you know, when you have the right on your side and you know how to organize a campaign, you can win. But you have to have somebody who knows how to go about doing it. And even in a strongly Democrat area, you can elect a conservative Republican, because most people, even most Democrats, really want individual freedom. And when they understand that it's under attack, they'll usually support the people who will preserve their freedom.
Right. And it's the leftist radicals, the hate Americas, those are the people. And you get down to the bottom line and you look at their vote. And you look at the way that they treat this entire issue. They are hate America. They are globalists. They have supported every New World Order globalist, UN, NAFTA, the whole ballgame, right down the line. And, of course, with the ultimate hope that when it all comes about, when they think it will all come about, they will have a higher position of power. It is so frightening to think of this mentality, because these people have children and grandchildren too. And yet it doesn't matter. The power and the greed override everything. And this is what we constantly share with the American public and try to put the word out as much as we possibly can. And it's people like you, Dr. Stan. Thank God for people like you and our other conservative talk show host here in Southern California, who bring the unvarnished truth. And it is, as I said, people are starting to listen. We truly believe that.
Well, I think that things are going to get very, very difficult in the weeks and months that lie ahead. I hope and pray that this war will be over in a relatively few days and with as little loss of life as possible. But, of course, whether that happens or not, I think that there are going to be dramatic complications here at home. I believe that we're going to, it's like poking a stick at a rattlesnake. He's going to strike back again. And unfortunately, Saddam Hussein, a man filled with hatred, certainly will do everything he can to strike at America, if he can. And if we say, well, you know, he's just got these Scud missiles that will only go 90 miles, you know, or maybe 120 miles, but if you had an Iraqi boat sitting off the coast of New York or San Francisco, is there anybody who doubts that they could launch a chemical or biological-filled weapon? And, of course, Saddam Hussein would never even consider doing that, unless we attacked him. But if he's going to be killed, do you think for 1 minute he would hesitate to strike back at this country?
Absolutely not. And the most frightening thing, Dr. Stan, is the fact that he doesn't have to do it from there. He has enough cells, terrorist cells, established. He and terrorists throughout the world, Osama bin Laden and the other terrorists, that's one thing that they do have in common, whether or not they're affiliated, they have enough terrorist cells established right here in the United States. And yet our own government is welcoming even more in and refusing to deport those that are here illegally and have overstayed their visas, they can't find them. Excuse me? This one gentleman said, you know, at any given moment of the day, Walmart can tell me exactly what their inventory is on toothbrushes and what the going price is. And yet our own federal government cannot keep track of the individuals coming into this country.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting, Barbara. You know, back in 1996, why Congress voted, tell the Immigration Service to begin setting up a computerized system and tracking everybody coming into the country. Mm-hmm. And the Immigration Service refused to carry out the directive from Congress. Now, either they were terribly stupid or they have intentionally created this problem, and I'd like to suggest that they're not stupid at all. They know exactly what they're doing, if they knew that their job was on the line, but they obviously had protection from somebody. They refused to do what would be logical, and by allowing the influx of illegal aliens, of course, down the line, eventually the American people are going to say, gee, we're going to have to, everybody's going to have an ID card, and all these, of course, various types of identifying who people are with various types of scans, and as I mentioned earlier,
right.
Biometric identifiers. We're going to have to do that just to bring everything under control. And as I said earlier, they create the problem. They already have the solution ready, knowing full well the American people will jump at this when it's offered to them. And the great tragedy is the average American doesn't realize he's constantly being manipulated by wicked and evil people who do have an agenda. And that agenda really is about a world order and a new world religion and the total destruction of individual freedom, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. We have the ability now to monitor literally everybody in the world and keep track of them with our computerized systems and with our satellites and with our echelon and with our carnivore systems. And don't think for one minute that they are not monitoring and following every one of these people who are Islamic terrorists. They know who they are and where they are. The only thing is, of course, they don't want the American people to know. We say we had no idea who these terrorists were, and yet did you notice within 2 or 3 days of September 11th, mm-hmm. why they'd already arrested 1,000 people and had them in detention. How do you think they knew who to arrest?
Yeah, wasn't that amazing?
Wasn't that just, that is either the fastest detective work of all time,
right.
or we knew exactly who they were, but they don't want the American people to know that they were tracking this whole thing, because then we might say, well, see, why was it that that morning of September 11th, 9 of those people were stopped at the various airports. We have the article, and somebody gave the orders. They were all to be released to get on the planes. Gee, you might just wonder what happened that morning.
That's right. That's right. And everybody, you even mentioned something like that and said, oh, please, a conspiracy? Yeah. Think about it real hard, folks. Look at the documented data. It's terrifying. It really is terrifying.
Well, I always tell people, if you're out there and you're interested, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you our October newsletter, which was the testimony of Kristen Breitweiser before the Senate Select Committee, in which he simply talked about what was known before the 9/11 attack. And you'll realize that our leaders were simply lying to the American people. We're out of time, Barbara. Let's get your telephone number out just one more time.
Okay. That is toll-free, 877, no illegals, and the actual numbers are 877-664-5534, and we'd love to hear from you.
God bless you. Thanks so very much for being with us tonight, Barbara.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Stan. Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. If you believe there's a problem and would like to be part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And as they say, if you'd like a free copy of any one of our newsletters, but if you'd like to know what really happened on September 11th, why ask for the October newsletter? And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival for our listeners. We ask you to pray for our ministers. We ask you to pray for the men who will be soon going into battle. We ask you to pray for the citizens of Iraq and for the citizens of Israel. And, of course, please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow when we'll be back, no, I guess it'll be Thursday when we'll be back, because Pastor Doug will be here tomorrow. Until Thursday, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.